Welcome to the Popcorn Talk Network, for the online broadcast network that features movie discussion, news, and interviews. Press one.
Popcorn Talk. We talk movies.
From the Popcorn Talk Network, the online broadcast network for movie talk, Alicia Malone with Scott Movie Mance and the Schmoes Know. This is Profile. In-depth spotlights on the greatest filmmakers and artists in motion picture history.
Hello, Profilers. Welcome to Profiles Malone and Mance. This week, episode 16 of Profiles.
Wow.
It's episode 16.
Craziness?
Can you believe it? Crazy, crazy, crazy.
I don't believe it.
Believe it, because this week we are going to spotlight an actor who really, when it comes to trying to pick our Fast Five, this was tough.
Leonardo DiCaprio. What does a guy have to do to win an Oscar?
What's he got to do to win an Oscar, this guy?
I mean, he has been consistently great for 20 years.
Yes.
His movies have grossed over $2 billion. He's been nominated 5 times. He hasn't won ever. And this is the kind of actor that really throws himself into performances. He is committed.
He is committed, made 27 feature films, a diverse and impressive career. I mean, talk about an actor who makes great movies. He challenges himself as an actor. Mm-hmm. He does not play it safe. He has defied his heartthrob status.
Yeah.
He has worked with some of the greatest directors, and we'll find out who in just a moment.
Yeah.
And really is a very committed environmentalist. But when it comes to all those other aspects, who does he remind you of?
Tom Cruise. Because he's kind of similar to Tom Cruise in that he's so famous, I feel like he's overlooked, or his talent is overlooked or underappreciated. And no one does Unhinged and Descent into Madness quite like Leonardo DiCaprio.
What's a guy got to do to win an Oscar around here?
He's played true characters. He's played crazy characters. I mean, what does he have to do?
Well, what does a guy like this have does he have a wonderful life or what? Let's talk about the change in this week's Wonderful Life.
Well, I thought instead of calling this segment It's a Wonderful Life, this week we would call it
This Boy's Life. How cute.
Roll it.
Leonardo Wilhelm DiCaprio was born on November 11, 1974 in Los Angeles, California. Leonardo's acting talents became obvious early on, so his parents signed him with a talent agency, and he quickly began appearing on commercials and television shows like Roseanne, The New Lassie, Parenthood, and Growing Pains. DiCaprio made his feature film debut in 1991 in the low-budget horror flick Critters 3, which was followed the very next year by his breakthrough performance alongside Robert De Niro in This Boy's Life. Just 1 year later, he was nominated for his first Academy Award for playing Johnny Depp's mentally challenged brother in What's Eating Gilbert Grape. After becoming a heartthrob with Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet in 1996, DiCaprio literally became the king of the world with 1997's box office smash, Titanic. He then spent the following decade working with one great director after another. Danny Boyle, Steven Spielberg, Ridley Scott, Christopher Nolan, Quentin Tarantino, and of course, Martin Scorsese. As an actor, Leonardo DiCaprio has been nominated for 4 Academy Awards.
That fifth Oscar, he was a producer on The Wolf of Wall Street.
Oh, right.
That's where the fifth Oscar comes in.
So 4 Oscars as an actor and then 1 as a producer.
And of all the great directors, I forgot to mention Clint Eastwood.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he's like Tom Cruise. He's just like works with the best directors.
He is so, so great. And he's someone that's been around for a long time. So what was your first blood with
my
Leo?
My first blood with Leo was What's Eating Gilbert Grape. Came out December 17th, 1993, just 2 years after I moved out to L.A. And I remember just seeing this. It's a quirky film, kind of an offbeat film directed by Lasse Hallström. And he plays Arnie Grape, and he is the mentally challenged younger brother of Johnny Depp. And I just, more than the performance, I have to say, at the time, I was like, his look was very different. He just had a very unique look to him. And I remember thinking, like, wow, this guy's really going to go places. And like the next year he did the De Niro movie, This yeah. Boy's Life. What about you?
My First Blood, I mean, I'm sure I must have seen him in things before. I didn't see What's Eating Gilbert Grape at the time. But the first time I remember going, who is this guy? Yeah. Was Romeo and Juliet.
Of course.
Baz Luhrmann's movie, 1996. I loved this movie. I saw it so many times. I think I saw it 4 times at the cinema because I loved the experience of it, the way the movie opens with that, like, oh, oh, yeah. And Shakespeare, it made all the dialogue really accessible. I thought that was really smart. And then, Leo as Romeo. I have to admit, this teenager Alicia Malone was very, very excited to see him on screen. I thought he was so hot, and he was also really great as Romeo, just this young romantic, and he has these boyish good looks about him,
and he still does,
and he's trying to fight it now, he's but at the time it was perfect for Romeo.
Yes, definitely. And that's a very stylized film, Baz Luhrmann, a great movie from 1996. And I'll talk about a great movie. Let's jump right into our Fast Five with
Titanic,
the biggest movie in the world for a very, very long time, released December 19th, 1997, nominated for 14 Academy Awards, and it tied with 1950's All About Eve as mm-hmm. the most nominated movie. It won 11 Oscars, one of 3 films, including Ben-Hur and Return of the King, to win 11 Academy Awards.
But no Best Actor.
No, what's a guy got to do to win and get nominated?
He didn't even get nominated for this role, and he really holds this together. You know, this was the film that launched Leo mania. You know, Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet, that's when people started to really notice him. But this movie made him super, super famous.
Yeah, sure did.
And I feel like it gets a bad rap, this film.
I feel like it's a lot of haters still.
Yeah, maybe because it did so well and, right. and everyone loved it for a long time that it's kind of cool to hate it now. But when you watch this movie again, it's a really well-made film.
Yeah, it
it's
sure
got
is.
Romance. It's got tension. It's got the tragedy. Every time I watch it, I just hope the boat doesn't sink.
Okay, what was your first blood with seeing Titanic? Do you remember the first time you saw it?
Yeah, I saw it. It came out Boxing Day, I think, in Australia, which is the day after Christmas.
Okay.
And it's really hot around that time, so everyone goes to the cinema because that's where it's really cold, the air conditioning.
Okay.
So I went and saw it there, and I saw it, I think, two other times after that because I just really enjoyed the experience. And at the time, I remember thinking, how can a film this long hold my attention? But it did the whole
really
way
does.
Through.
Yeah, I saw it the weekend it came out in Westwood, and I remember I went and there were a lot of people in line wearing Lightstorm Entertainment jackets. Lightstorm
right.
Entertainment, Lightstorm produced Titanic.
All right.
So during the film, I mean, it was just really crazy. Like when you're just watching scenes of the Titanic go across the ocean, you know, mm-hmm. before the iceberg hits, I mean, it would just be like a regular shot of the Titanic in the ocean, and people would whoop and holler because don't forget at the time, this movie cost $200 million to make.
Yeah.
That was a very big deal.
It's actually cost more to make than it cost to make the original ship Titanic.
Oh, wow.
It costs more to make the movie.
It costs more to make the movie. Well, listen, this was a budget that everybody was thinking was going to bankrupt Fox and Paramount. They co-produced the project together, and it was supposed to come out the summer of 1997, but because they were just so behind with the special effects and post-production, it got delayed until December. Turned out to be a good thing that happened, because then the movie opened. It spent 16 weeks number one at the box office.
Wow.
And won 11 Oscars. And I gotta tell you, you know, I still, to this day, I love the movie. Mm. I think that Leo as Jack Dawson and Rose, Beckinsale.
Winslet.
Kate Winslet.
Yes.
Thank you. They have great chemistry. It's a great love story.
It is. It's an over-the-top romance, but it's got that grounding with the historical drama behind it. Those two are fantastic. Leo has this, you know, just charming way about him, the sparkly eyes, and he played Jack Dawson just perfectly. And I was hearing when James Cameron was trying to convince Leo to come on board, because Leo originally didn't want to do it because he likes darker characters, and he thought this character is too light and it's too much of a romance. And James Cameron said, you know, that's actually a trickier role, the challenge of being a Gregory Peck, someone like that who seemingly does nothing but holds the whole film together. And that's why I think Leo is kind of overlooked for this movie. He's much more than just good looks.
Well, the studio actually wanted Matthew McConaughey.
Yeah, and Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise as Jack Dawson?
Yeah.
He seems like even then he would have been a little too old for that role.
I thought so, but they wanted him. They didn't audition him, but they just wanted him as one of the names.
Well, Cameron definitely fought for DiCaprio and won. And it's amazingly, the king of the world line was ad-libbed.
Yes.
Ad-libbed. Wow. And it's such an iconic line that when Cameron won the Oscar for Best Director and Best Picture, and he said, "I'm king of the world," like, he was quoting the movie. But everyone thought, like, oh, my God, he's so arrogant.
Yeah.
I'm like, I didn't think he was arrogant at all.
One funny bit of trivia, you know, the sketching scene, and there's one shot where they show Jack's hands sketching Rose, but it's actually James Cameron's hands.
And why
not
is
Leo's
that?
Hands. I don't know.
Because I think, like, one of the characters was left-handed.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah, something with, like, the left and right hand thing, you know? But the other thing is that the LA Times, at the time, gave Titanic a bad review.
Really?
And I just had to pull this. It gave it a pan. It said that the writing was not within James Cameron's abilities, not even close, and that James Cameron retaliated by writing a letter to the LA Times film critic Kenneth Turan, being like, "How can you diss this movie?" It was a big deal.
Yeah.
It was a very big deal when that happened. But the other interesting tidbit about Titanic is, after this movie opened, Leonardo DiCaprio could have done anything he wanted.
Mm-hmm.
He literally was the biggest star in the world, bigger than Tom Cruise, Tom Hanks, any of those guys.
Oh, girls loved him. Guys loved him.
Guys wanted to
be him.
And what does he do? He takes 3 years off from acting. Like, he really could have done anything and gotten paid a boatload for it, and he took 3 years off. His next movie was Danny Boyle's The Beach, which I liked. I mean, I didn't love it.
I love the book more than the movie, but I like the movie because of the book.
I thought the movie was fine.
Yeah.
And I just think that no matter what he would have done after Titanic,
it couldn't compare.
Nothing could compare.
That level of mania about this movie. I remember, I think my mum saw it a couple of times as well because she loved it. It was a movie that crosses generations. It's huge as well. I think there was over 1,000 extras, over 100 speaking parts in the movie. And James Horner, who did the music for it, said the first cut he saw of Titanic, 36 hours long.
36 hours. Woof.
Had some editing to do.
It's a good thing they got it down to a little over 3 hours because it became the highest grossing movie of all time worldwide, $1.8 billion. That was topped 9 years later, or 12 years later, by James Cameron's own Avatar.
Yeah.
But when Titanic was re-released a couple years ago, it went up to $2.2 billion worldwide. So James Cameron has the number one and number two highest grossing films of all time.
Amazing. And people have been requesting him for profile, so we will do him at some point.
We will do James Cameron at some point, yes.
Now, not a lot of love for Titanic on our Facebook page,
no.
Profiles with Malone and Mance and Schmoes No Network, but Tyler Moore says, "Titanic is an incredible movie. Kate Winslet's breakout role was her breakout role for a reason. She is incredible in the film, but Leo is also great, and one of the reasons I love the film, it deserves all its accolades. It's amazing."
And we agree.
We agree.
Go Titanic.
Even though it's a bit, even though people don't like it anymore, I still love it.
Well, I do too, and I just love, there are so many scenes. Trying to pick his Fast Five, Leonardo DiCaprio's Fast Five, was hard, but trying to pick a scene, like a standout scene, was really hard. But what is your Leonardo DiCaprio right stuff?
Oh, it was really difficult. I went back and forth on a couple of different ones, but one that I like because it shows the level of commitment that Leo has to his roles is from Django Unchained, Calvin Candy, when he does his big freak out. So they're at the dinner table, he saws off the piece of the African skull, he's making a point about that, and the way he switches from calm to crazy and then back to calm again is really interesting. And on the sixth take of that, he slammed his hand down on the table, smashed a glass in the process. His hand was bleeding everywhere. He didn't flinch. He kept on going. And that's the take they use in the film.
Whoa.
That just shows a level of commitment and focus with him that he didn't even notice he did it till afterwards.
That's commitment. That's mm-hmm. focus. Yeah, mine was a scene that you talked about before in our Scorsese episode of Profiles. But I do love the Quaalude scene from The Wolf of Wall Street.
It's insane.
It is so crazy. And this is a scene that comes really late into the film, a film that is already nearly long. 3 hours long. And there was so much decadence and over the top in The Wolf of Wall Street. But the scene where he takes the Quaaludes and then he goes, oh, maybe I didn't get home okay. And then it flashes back to how he, you know, drove crazy home. But just the scene on the phone where he's like, hang up the phone! Hang up the phone! Oh, it is just so, so funny. It's so funny.
And it's just one of those scenes, we'll talk more about Wolf of Wall Street later, but just one of those scenes that shows the crazy excess of that movie.
Yes, and there's a lot of excess in that film.
A lot of excess.
But it's really great, as we'll get to that film very, very soon.
Yeah, but now hit me with some trivia with our last detail.
Our last detail. Got lots of good last details for you. Mm-hmm. Did you know that Steven Spielberg's original choice for the part of Frank Abagnale Jr. in Catch Me If You Can was Johnny Depp?
Oh, interesting.
Very interesting.
Well, did you know that Leo was considered for the role of Patrick Bateman in American Psycho, but he said no?
He said no.
Because he had a lot of young fans at the time, so he didn't think it was appropriate. But I think he would have been good as well.
That would have been the next movie after Titanic.
Yeah.
Because American Psycho came out in, I think, February of 2000.
So, yeah, that's probably why he said no.
He said, I'm not going to, traumatize my fans too much.
Yeah. Well, I love how we're on the same page. I can see one of your points was about James Cameron's hands.
I mean, it's right here. Right here.
We always have the same things written down, even though we don't consult with each other.
That is hilarious. Same brain, same wavelength here. I was going to say, did you know that in Titanic, the hand scenes sketchy of Rose are not Leo's, they're James Cameron's? But she already said that you stole my last detail.
Sorry.
So I'm going to hit you up with the fact that Titanic is the first Oscar Best Picture winner to be produced, directed, written, and edited by the same person, James Cameron.
Ah, there you go.
Got one more.
All right. Did you know, well, you mentioned before that Leo, he does a lot of environmental work.
Yes.
And he's very charitable. So did you know this year he donated $3 million to save ocean wildlife? Last year he donated $3 million to save tigers in Nepal and $61,000 to support gay rights.
Wow.
Good on him.
Way to go, Leo.
He really uses his fame and his money for good causes. I like that about him.
That is a very, very cool thing. Well, coming in at a fast five, number four, what could it be?
Come in with the milk.
Repeat it.
Come in with the milk.
From the beginning.
Come in with the milk.
Come in with the milk.
Way to future.
The Aviator. The Aviator, released December 25th, 2004. Wow, it's its 10th anniversary of The Aviator. Whoa, that's kind of scary. Directed by...
Makes me feel old.
Martin Scorsese. It cost $110 million to make. Box office total, $214 million. Nominated for 11 Oscars. It won 5. Leo was nominated for Best Actor.
Woo-hoo. No win.
No, what's it got? It's got to do to win an Oscar around here.
No, because this was such a brilliant role for him, playing Howard Hughes, a very crazy character. The second film he's done with Scorsese at this time, he really anchors the movie. He delivers so much more than simply playing another character, playing a real life character. He portrays Howard Hughes over so many years of his life, and he's believable at every stage.
Definitely.
He's believable as the fresh-faced guy working on Hell's Angels, and then he's believable as the crazy guy who gives in to his OCD and the come in with the milk scene. On every level, he is fantastic in this movie.
This is a challenging role, a role where he has to age over a long period of time, mm-hmm. and he carries the film, like you said, second time working with Scorsese. It's also the first movie he co-produced with his Appian Way shingle, and it's an epic character study, again, a little on the longer side, which is not not unusual for a Martin Scorsese movie, but he just carries every single scene. And this is a movie that could easily have consumed the an actor because of the scope of its epic production,
mm-hmm.
but he rises above it, proving that he really is one of the greatest actors of our time.
Such a great spirit to this character as well, because even though he does have his inner demons, you see how Howard Hughes was this great risk taker and very ambitious and very charismatic, a ladies' man.
Yep.
And Leo is perfect to play all those facets of the one character.
It's an epic character study, and Leonardo DiCaprio really humanized the character.
Exactly.
And in his review at the time, Roger Ebert, God rest his soul, said, "What a sad man," referring to Howard Hughes, "what brief glory, what an enthralling film, 166 minutes, and it races past."
It does.
It does.
I mean,
great.
It's long, but I rewatched it again, even though we watched it recently for our Scorsese episode, and I just still really enjoy it.
I love that scene when he's locked in the screening room with all the bottles of you know what.
Come in with the milk, yeah.
Yeah, and then right outside is Juan Tripp, played by Alec Baldwin,
mm-hmm.
and Alec Baldwin clearly sees him as his arch enemy, and he's like totally taunting him. It's just a great, one of the many great scenes of this film, proving just how awesome he is as an actor.
And that's right, we talked about this movie with Cate Blanchett, with our Cate Blanchett episode too, because of course she is fantastic.
Yes, she is.
As she always is, and those two worked really well off each other.
Well, lots of great players in Leonardo DiCaprio movies.
Do you want me to read out what Schmoville had to say?
Why don't you do that before I jump ahead? Yes, yes,
calm
please
down.
Do.
Calm down there, Matt. Cole Boone says, "The Aviator was the first time I personally ever saw Leonardo DiCaprio transform himself into a character. His depiction of Howard Hughes is one that is both spot on and tragic at the same time. He did a terrific job at portraying OCD on screen that made it feel highly believable. It's a shame DiCaprio lost the Academy Award to Jamie Foxx, because this may just be the greatest performance of his career as of now." Definitely one of the greatest.
Definitely
ones.
One of the greatest. And George McCann, another great profiler,
yay,
says,
George.
"Yay, George. I think The Aviator is DiCaprio's best work. The way he brings out the ambition and intelligence of Howard Hughes, as well as his manic mental decline, is heartbreaking and stunning to watch. We see a man go from having everything to being locked alone in a closet. Sublime acting. The show me the blueprints. Gotta have the blueprint scene. And the air hanger is unsettling. DiCaprio's portrayal of Manny is uncomfortably amazing."
Yeah, because that's the thing. He portrays that level of mania, but very believable.
Very, very
realistic.
Believable.
Doesn't seem like it's someone acting crazy.
I agree.
He's committed once again. So the player, we're going to do this a little bit differently. You're going to talk about Leo's leading ladies, and I'm going to talk about some other characters of his that I enjoy.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Well, obviously, one of the great leading ladies has to be Rose, played by Kate Winslet in Titanic. And the movie made her a star just as much as it made him a star. And just their chemistry together, the way they just saved each other. And he taught her how to spit.
Yeah.
And, you know.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And that was ad-lib, too.
That was ad-lib?
That scene, yeah.
Oh, gosh.
And she almost spit into Billy Zane's face.
But that's the scene where he's painting her, even though, as we now know twice, that it wasn't really his hands.
Yeah.
But it's just such a romantic scene, such a beautiful scene, such an erotic
scene.
Very, very sexy.
And the hand down the car
window. Yes, that's a little corny. That's a little corny, but it's still good.
Steaming up the car
there. Hit me up.
Well, a character I like that Leonardo has done is Amsterdam from Gangs of New York in 2002. Because at the time, this was a very different role for Leo. It's more of a villain character. He does this gangster thug. Didn't get nominated.
What's a guy got to do to get nominated around here?
I mean, I understand when you're in the same movie as Daniel Day-Lewis, it is hard. It is tough, but still, he's fantastic.
Well, another great Leo leading lady, of course, was Claire Danes, Juliet in Romeo and Juliet. You talked a lot about this movie already. Another perfect match with Leo and Claire. And I just love the style of this movie. And you know, Baz Luhrmann sort of has a style that you kind of love it or you hate it. And at the time, I was still loving it. I think he's gone a little bit over the top. Although, like with The Great Gatsby, I remember when we reviewed it for Malone's Movie Minute, you said it's a lot of sizzle, no steak.
Yeah, that's right.
Yes.
Yeah, because Romeo and Juliet was part of Baz Luhrmann's Red Curtain trilogy, and that was Strictly Ballroom, Moulin Rouge, and Romeo and Juliet. And those three I love. Since then, not so much.
Okay, hit me up again.
Well, I love Cobb in Inception. We spoke about him during Christopher Nolan's episode because, once again, he is the emotional center of the movie because it's a very complex plot.
Very complex.
Very high concept, and you need someone to ground it. And Leo did such a great job in the, making you believe that he's doing everything to get over the guilt from his wife and to get back to his kids.
Well, in The Wolf of Wall Street, I got to tell you, even though I watched the show Pan Am, I did not expect to be bowled over by Margot Robbie. Aussie.
I know.
She was fantastic in this film. And yes, I mean, she starts the film basically as a sex pot, you know, and it, you know, we've talked before about how Scorsese, a lot of his women are not treated, they're not depicted very, very good. Mm-hmm. But I felt like Margot Robbie as Naomi in this film really, she really rose to the occasion. She held her own with Leo and with this enormous cast and this enormous film. It's a great star-making performance.
Yes.
And now, of course, she's very, very, very busy.
I have to say, I was really impressed with her. I remember seeing her in Neighbours, which is an Australian soap opera that a lot of the Australian actors do. And I thought, yeah, she's beautiful, beautiful girl. She was just incredible in this movie because she held her own with Leo.
Yeah, she definitely did.
And that is really tough to do. And she did a great accent,
too. She is sexy and she's a survivor.
And I just wanted to mention J. Edgar Hoover from J. Edgar. Not so much a fantastic movie, a little bit boring, but
he was good.
Is insane the way he transforms.
Yes,
it just deserves just a little.
Yes,
golf
way to
clap.
Go. Yes, a little golf clap for Leo and J. Edgar.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that brings us to
quiz show.
Yeah. You want to go first?
Okay.
Okay.
I'll go first.
You go first.
So, which actor lost out to Leo for roles in What's Eating Gilbert Grape and Titanic? Should I give you the options?
Give me some choices, yes.
Is it A, Mark Wahlberg, B, Christian Bale, or C, Tobey Maguire?
I'm going to say Toby.
No, actually no. Christian Bale.
Christian Bale lost What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
And Titanic.
Christian Bale
Christian
and Titanic.
Bale. He was probably
Whoa.
Just one of the names that were mentioned, but interesting.
Interesting. I think Christian Bale would have been pretty good.
Yeah, in What's Eating Gilbert Grape?
Yeah, in both of those movies.
Yeah.
But my question for you, okay. Alicia Malone, is Titanic was the number one movie for 16 straight weeks. What movie knocked it from the top spot? Was it A, Primary Colors, B, Mouse Hunt, C, Lost in Space, or D, City of Angels?
Ooh. See, this is where you would be better because you know dates better than me. Primary Colors?
Lost in Space. Of all the movies, wait, of all the movies, the top, Titanic.
Yeah.
To knock Titanic from the top
spot.
Lost in Space?
That's why I thought, no, surely not.
Yeah, surely it can't be that. Surely it was.
Surely not. All right, well, now we're up to Fast Five number 3, which is...
I'm not a doctor. I never went to medical school. I'm not a lawyer or a Harvard graduate or a Lutheran.
Catch me if you can.
Boy, this movie is great. Came out December 25th, 2002, directed by Steven Spielberg. And here's what's interesting about December 2002. Now at that time, Leonardo, he did Titanic. Then he took 3 years off. Mm-hmm. He did The Beach, which was not well received. So then he comes back in December of 2002, December 20th, Gangs of New York. 5 days later, Catch Me If You Can. Double dose of Leo in two completely different roles that he knocked out of the park.
Definitely. And I feel like this role as Frank Abagnale Jr. is perfect for Leo because the character has such boyish good looks and charm that you really would believe him if he was trying to con you. I would just go with whatever Frank says because he is so charming. He's smart. He's believable. Once again, a character who goes over a few different years of his life.
Yep.
And such a great cat and mouse game between him and Tom Hanks.
And it's a, like you said, it's a smart movie. And he's charming. He's very resourceful.
Mm-hmm.
He's what it was called, himself the James Bond of the skies.
Yeah. And you want him to win. You like him so much that you don't want him to get caught except when he wants to get caught. And then you want him to get caught just for him.
But I love that scene. You know, Tom Hanks had been chasing him for years. And then he goes to see him in jail and he shows him the check and he starts talking about, this isn't a real check. And he's it's like, it suddenly he gets this like flash of light and he goes, wait a minute here. This guy could be very, very useful to the FBI.
And he finding, was.
And he was. And it was just the dynamic between Hanks and DiCaprio. They both were lonely. They had nobody. And like, and this was a Christmas movie.
Yeah.
And Christmas is all over this film. It's so interesting to watch. Like every Christmas Eve, Frank would call,
yeah.
Carl Hanratty. You know, I like you. Knock, knock. Who's there? Go F yourself.
Yeah.
Tom Hanks is hilarious in this movie.
And that scene where Frank, he looks into his mother's new house and he sees he's been replaced.
Yep.
And she has a new life. That is so heartbreaking. And you see it in his eyes. And that's the thing that Leo does so well, is bring the emotion to any character. And I love Christopher Walken also.
Oh, he's so good. He's so good in this movie.
As the father, I know a lot of people can do a Christopher Walken impression.
Not going to try.
I cannot, but I like the two little mice fell into a bucket of cream, like that whole motif that keeps coming back.
You're watching Christopher Walken do Christopher Walken, but he got nominated for this movie for supporting actor, and John Williams' score also got nominated. Those two, the only two Oscars. Nothing for Leo. What's a guy got to do to get nominated? What's a guy got to do? Now, this movie cost around $52 million to make, and it made $350 million worldwide at the box office.
Wow.
I got to review it at the time.
What did you say?
In my review, in December of 2002, I said, after being MIA since washing up on the cinematic shores of 2000's The Beach,
what?
Leonardo DiCaprio's back with not one, but two impressive, though very different, undertakings. There's his gritty portrayal of an Irish immigrant out for revenge in Gangs of New York, but fans who made him the king of the world with 1997's top-grossing Titanic will most likely embrace the smashing, dashing Leo of Catch Me If You Can.
Mm.
He's perfectly suited for the role, and the film ultimately guides through its flaws because of a strong, charismatic performance. And then I went on to say, simply enjoy the movie for what it is, an entertaining, cool breeze that you should definitely catch if you can.
Ah, good one, Mance. It is very fun to watch. There are some funny moments. At the same time, it's been quite dramatic. It's just a good, fun heist movie. I love the opening titles.
Oh, the reverse Saul Bass.
Oh, Saul Bass. He is so great. He does all the posters as well.
Yep.
And, you know, this movie started development back in 1980, but DreamWorks didn't get the rights until 1997. So that's when it really took off. But this was, as you said, this time in Leo's life was when he started to move into the more serious, more complex roles, and then from there he just went woo.
And even if the movie wasn't great, like Body of Lies, directed by Ridley Scott, not a great movie, but he's really good in it.
Always good.
He's always good. Even like you said, J. Edgar, not a great movie, but he still makes it watchable. Darius Hughes and Schmillville had this to say about Catch Me If You Can: his performance as Frank Abagnale Jr. is just so good. It's his best performance, in my opinion. Just so real, relatable, believable, and honest. It's funny and heartbreaking at the same time.
Exactly what I said. That's
exactly
good.
What you
that
said.
That means you're correct, Darius Hughes. Liam Logrand says, my favorite Leo performance is Frank Abagnale Jr. in Catch Me If You Can. He was so likable, and we're rooting for him to continue to participate in his shenanigans around the world. His dynamic with Tom Hanks is fantastic, and I love that it's based on a true story, one of Spielberg's most underrated films.
It is underrated, because I remember at the time I thought it was fine.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I liked it. But watching it again just the other day to prep for Profiles, which is one of the things I love about doing Profiles. So much fun rewatching these movies. I liked it a lot more. It is an underrated film and an underrated Spielberg movie.
Well, speaking of underrated, instead of The Good, The Bad, The Ugly this week, we are renaming the segment
The Outsiders.
Because Leonardo DiCaprio has so many movies that he's done, and we feel like we would be remiss if we didn't mention quite a few of them. So hit me with it.
You go first.
I was going to say Revolutionary Road, even though it made me never ever want to get married.
Yes.
In my life. The re-teaming of Leo and Kate together, such heartbreaking emotional performances.
It is definitely a heartbreaking movie. I have to say again, The Beach, underrated film, directed by Danny Boyle. I thought it was fine for what it was. Again, there was a lot of backlash against Leo because he had just was so successful. But this was a role that I feel like it deserves to be seen again. It deserves a revision, so to speak.
Well, Shutter Island, I think, is an underappreciated movie. There, he definitely does his descent into madness. It's got that great twist towards the end and just a creepy atmosphere throughout.
Well, not that Django and Sheen is an underrated movie.
No.
Because it's very, very good. But, you know, again, we've talked about this in Your Right Stuff. DiCaprio, like, first time in a while he had played a baddie. But to get to work with Quentin Tarantino, you could tell that he really sunk his teeth into the role and he really just knocked it out of the park.
We mentioned Romeo and Juliet. That's one, still one of my favorite movies. Yeah. Django Unchained, you mentioned Inception. Also, The Departed.
The Departed. Great movie.
Great movie.
Great movie. Came out around the same time as Blood Diamond, which is a movie we're going to talk about very, very soon. But it was a great ensemble. Scorsese won Best Picture and Best Director for 2006.
No Oscar nomination for Leo.
What's
on that
a guy
one.
Gotta do to get nominated?
Do, because in that film, he plays both sides really well. The Boston cop and the mole, he could be convincing in either.
But the other thing about The Departed was, I mean, even though I thought he was great in The Aviator and in Gangs of New York, with The Departed, I felt like this was the first time...
He was a man.
He looked like a man.
Yeah.
Like, he still had the boyish face, but, you know, he looked like he hadn't slept in days. He had the scruff going on. He looked like a man. Like, he finally grew into the roles that he wanted to be doing.
Yes,
you know what I mean?
Definitely. I know. Oh, before we move on, let me... Break down
the
these brackets.
Yes.
Okay. I've got them on my new phone.
Your new
no
six.
Big deal. So Steve Zissou, thank you so much for doing this for us again. This is on our Facebook page, Profiles with Malone and Mance on the Schmoes Know Network. Give it a like if
Give
you
it
haven't
a like.
Already. So this week they did the favorite characters for Leonardo DiCaprio. So Steve says this was the most votes ever on a bracket, close to 100 on the championship rounds. So it was between Calvin Candy versus Howard Hughes and Jordan Belfort versus Billy Costigan.
Okay.
And then it came down to Jordan Belfort versus Calvin Candy. Jordan Belfort won by 2 votes.
Whoa, that's tight.
Jordan from Wolf of Wall Street. So according to Schmoville, that is the best Leo character. What do you think? Let us know if you're watching this on youtube.com/popcorntalknetwork. Make sure you leave us a little comment below because we like to read them all and we reply when we can.
We do reply and we love that everybody gets involved with Profiles by going to Profiles with Malone and Mance on the Schmoes Know Network. That is our Facebook page. Go there, join in on the fun, comment on the brackets, let us know which of our favorite movies you like to, let us know what you think of Profiles, and please absolutely go to iTunes. This is very, very important. Go to iTunes and subscribe to our podcast. Rate and review us on iTunes. Cannot stress how important it is for you out there to please rate and review us on iTunes.
Yeah.
We need those to survive.
And if you have already subscribed, just double check that you are still subscribed.
Yes.
'Cause sometimes it just disappears, you know, and we want you to keep up with it every week. And you can also follow our fan Twitter at ProfilesSK or at Alicia Malone.
And at Movie Mance on Twitter.
Keep going with our Fast Five
number two.
That's all right. I'm exactly where I'm supposed to be.
Blood Diamond.
Wow, what a powerful movie. It's released December 8th, 2006. Nominated for 5 Academy Awards, including Best Supporting Actor, Jaimin Hunsu. Best Actor, Leonardo DiCaprio.
No win.
What's a guy got to do to win?
Well, this was the same year as The Departed.
Yep.
So many people say that they thought he should have been nominated for The Departed rather than for Blood Diamond. I disagree because Blood Diamond, he pulled off this accent. Some people say he didn't. But for me, I thought he did a brilliant job at the South African accent. And not only just the accent, he transformed physically as well.
Yep.
The way he held himself, the way he walked. This is when he was starting to look like a man.
Exactly.
So, and he definitely pulled off this character perfectly.
I thought he was great in Blood Diamond. And I agree. I think that even though I like The Departed better as a film, I thought his performance in Blood Diamond was the stronger performance. Physical and emotional transformation that he starts off by being just a selfish smuggler who just wants that big, huge pink diamond.
And then he changes
over the course
of the movie.
Right. He sort of has that sort of Han Solo transformation where he goes from being selfish to selfless. And this movie cost $100 million to make. It made only $57 million domestically, but worldwide it did okay. It made $172 million. It's a real politically charged movie, powerful, gripping.
Tough movie.
Watching it again made me think to myself, you know, this is another film that people need to go back and watch again.
Yeah, it's a tough movie when you see all the child soldiers, the Civil War, the rich guys getting richer and profiting from all this blood. It brings up so many issues, and I didn't know too much about the concept of blood diamonds before I saw this back in 2006, so this movie actually taught me a lot.
Right.
And when you look at the plot and you look at the characters, you think, yeah, that all sounds pretty standard and all sounds pretty predictable where it starts and where it ends, but the acting is what elevates it. And Leonardo DiCaprio with Jimon Hounsou, who's so good, those two together make this film so watchable.
They definitely had great chemistry together. Mm. They made a great team. And Blood Diamond, I didn't know what a Blood Diamond was either until I saw this movie. And diamonds were mined for war in war zones and sold to finance conflicts and arms. And of course, the people who paid off were the warlords and of course the diamond companies.
Mm.
So, I mean, it was educational. I didn't know what a Blood Diamond meant. Now, this movie took place during the civil wars of Sierra Leone between 1996 and 2001. And yeah, just watching this movie, it was so disturbing to see just the rebels so merciless and pitiless against people just chopping off their arms and using the kids to be soldiers.
Yeah, that's really,
this really happened.
It's really, really heartbreaking because you know it's true. It made me go, no, I do not want a blood diamond. Not that anyone was trying to give me a diamond anyway, but if they do, don't give me a blood diamond.
Don't get a blood diamond.
Still get me some kind of diamond.
Well, in their review, you'll get a diamond. You will get a big diamond, and it won't be a blood diamond, Alicia Malone. In her review for USA Today, Claudia Puig said, "This is the first time the boyish actor Leonardo DiCaprio truly seemed like a man on film."
It's true. This year was a good year for Leo, 2006.
Definitely.
Good year.
So was 2013, but we'll get to that.
And Rachel Cushing loves Blood Diamond. She said, I love Leo in Blood Diamond because it was the first role where I thought of him as a man. Many of his earlier roles played off his youthful charm, but he buried much of that in the role of Danny Archer. He is a quiet man with demons and a smoldering, ultimately righteous rage that propels him in this really underrated drama by the wonderful director Edward Zwick.
Well, Rachel Cushing is such an amazing writer. She should be making a living as a film critic.
And it's so hard for an American to do a South African accent or an Australian accent. That's accent to pull off.
I bought into it. I totally believe him.
Yeah.
And
all
so
right,
did
Brooke.
Dan Skip Allen, another great profiler. He says it has a great mix of action and suspense while also telling a story about a subject we rarely see, the diamond trade in Africa.
Mm.
This is a cutthroat world for everybody involved. Leo was great as the protagonist in this very entertaining drama.
Before we move on to our Fast Five number one, shall we read out some other comments about other films
Leo
people love? So Niffa McCarthy says, What's Eating Gilbert Grape is his fave. Took years for me to accept Leonardo DiCaprio as an adult because of the indelible performance images from his performance in What's Eating Gilbert Grape. I really could barely accept him in other films for a long time as any other character as a result of that role. Interesting.
Well, interesting. Jason Smith had to pick a movie that we haven't even talked about. The Quick and the Dead from 1995, directed by Sam Raimi. The Quick and the Dead was an amazing vehicle for the very young and up-and-coming Leonardo DiCaprio. He was a talent among talents in that cast. He brought his own unique brand to the character, and he made that Western so much better.
And Nikolai Quack also mentions one we haven't mentioned yet, The Man in the Iron Mask.
Yep.
It was one of his earlier roles, and a really difficult one for that matter, since he had to play two very different characters. The whole movie is a darker take on the story of the Three Musketeers, who are all superbly played by Gerard Depardieu, Jeremy Irons, and John Malkovich. It has great action, genuine drama, not to mention a heartbreaking as well as despicable performance from Leo.
And Lisa Silverman picked This Boy's Life from 1992, going way back. I think This Boy's Life is so underrated. It was his first real film. He was working with Robert De Niro and was able to hold his own. Great in this movie. Absolutely.
And what's
great.
Going on here? Calvin Candy himself has left a little note about Django Unchained.
Very funny.
And he says that Calvin Candy in Django Unchained was his first time playing a villain. He hasn't played a character like that before, and he does it successfully since I was terrified of him the whole time. Even Calvin was terrified of Calvin.
Either one of two things happened there, Alicia. Either somebody left the name Calvin Candy, or I just screwed up in the cut and paste.
I like to believe that it's Calvin Candy.
Calvin
just
Candy.
Going, no, come on. I'm good at being a villain.
I'd like to think that Calvin Candy is a profiler.
Yeah.
Yes. Counting Candy is a great profile. We love it.
Okay, awesome. All right, let's go to our Fast Five number one, which has to be...
The year I turned 26 as the head of my own brokerage firm, I made $49 million, which really pissed me off because it was three shy of $1 million a week.
Yeah, wow, that was annoying. The Wolf of Wall Street.
Wolf of Wall Street, great movie, released December 25th, 2013. How many movies is that on this list that came out on Christmas Day? It's like three of them. Amazing.
A good time.
It's Christmas time when you have a new Leo movie to look forward to. This movie cost $100 million to make. Box office worldwide, $392 million. Nominated for five Academy Awards, including Best Picture, Best Director for Martin Scorsese, and Leonardo DiCaprio, Best Actor.
No win.
What's a guy got to do to win an Oscar around here?
At this stage, he's still like bribed them or something.
But he did win the Golden Globe.
Yeah, good.
Good, okay.
He got something.
Best actor, musical, or comedy.
This is the best Leo performance ever, in my opinion, because it's the culmination of everything he's done in his career. You've got the real life story. You've definitely got the descent into madness. You've got the charmer. You've got the good-looking con man, the ladies' man. And it's all done with such commitment that borders on possession.
It is great. It is a performance of his career.
He puts everything into it.
And that is a bold statement when you look at the other performances that we just talked about. Mm. But just the scene when he is like rallying everybody at his firm and he does, it looks like he did most of it in one take. I mean, this was a movie that really demanded a lot, so much that the original cut in this film was 4 hours long.
Wow.
And Scorsese pared it down to 3.
You know what? I would watch a 4-hour version of this movie. Wolf of Wall Street, when I first saw it, I didn't like it at all.
Really?
I came out feeling really sick and really sick about life and people and just Wall Street in general. You know, I was angry. And then I realized, well, that's what it's supposed to make you do.
Exactly.
Because if you walk out of that movie and you're like, that looks like fun, I want to be just like Jordan, then there is something seriously wrong with you because you should not feel like that watching this film. And for me, that was Martin Scorsese return to form. It's kind of like his Goodfellas coming back, where he's all about excess and mania.
Yeah, it definitely had that Goodfellas feel to it. Goodfellas and Casino.
Yeah.
And, you know, this was like when I first saw the movie Wall Street, the Michael Douglas version, it came out in 1987. You know, that was a film that a lot of people idolized Gordon Gekko, character played by Michael Douglas. They
Greed
wanted to
good.
Be him. Greed is good. And in, you know, when Wolf of Wall Street came out, people like, wow, they idolized Jordan Belfort.
That's
and
awful.
It's like, what do you, let's take a step back
it's like
here,
you're
people.
Not getting the point.
Yeah. Do you realize what you're saying?
Because this is a really ugly character. And I think it's all props to Leo for pulling this off in such a way that you still kind of like him, even though he's despicable and does such crazy things.
The scene on the boat when Kyle Chandler as the FBI agent.
Yeah.
And they're sitting there and the doing all the niceties and he's saying...
And you kind of want him to get caught.
You want him to get caught. But here's Kyle Chandler who took a subway to get to work, and then at the end of the film, it shows him on the subway thinking, okay, yeah, I did my job, and here I am taking a subway home.
Yeah.
When Jordan, like, was living this huge high life.
On
the boats. And this world traveler, all this money, all these girls and everything.
Caught up to him eventually, but we mentioned the word excess several times because this movie is all about excess. Even the length of the film is excessive, although I said I would watch more of it. The Quaalude scene is a great example of that excess and just that insane stuff that happens, and it's almost unbelievable these days to have such a big budget studio film doing this crazy stuff. It's like a runaway train. It just goes.
It's fun. It's outrageous. It's despicable. It makes you feel all the things that you should feel.
It never asked for sympathy.
No, it didn't.
No.
But you still got it because he was so charming in this role, too. Well, our friend Mark Tordai from Schmoville said, playing Jordan Belfort in Wolf of Wall Street, Leo proved he wasn't just another pretty face. He also proved that he is physical comedy Tommy as well. The lewd scene was honestly one of the funniest yet saddest scenes that I've ever seen in a Scorsese film, brilliantly executed by DiCaprio.
There was a lot of physical stuff that he had to do in this role. Sam Cox says, I'd always been an admirer of Leo's work, but the performance that captivated me the most was his performance in The Wolf of Wall Street. You know that his character is a despicable crook, but his charisma makes him so damn likable.
Yeah.
He captured Jordan's rise to success and his downfall perfectly. That's what I like about the film. Side note from me, that you're enjoying the ride up and then you can't wait to see the crash
down. You're just waiting for it to happen. happened.
Yeah, and it's fun to watch him come crashing down. I loved Matthew McConaughey in Dallas Buyers Club, but I truly do believe that 2014 should have been DiCaprio's year. The Wolf of Wall Street features DiCaprio's best performance, but he is such an incredible talent, which means I wouldn't be surprised if he tops that performance in the future. And one day when he does get an Oscar,
we'll
and he
say,
has to one day.
We told you so.
Plus, it'll be for his entire career, much like when Scorsese won for Departed.
Right.
It's like really for the whole career, not just for that one
film.
He's
going to win. It's in the cards. It has to happen. And speaking of Matthew McConaughey for Dallas Buyers Club, he was hilarious.
And that's what he does.
He is so funny in this movie.
And then they put that in the film because how he warms up.
He improvised a lot, and Scorsese encouraged a lot of improv in this movie. So shall we run through our Fast Five?
So this Fast Five was really hard to pick, so let us know whether you agree with it or if you disagree. But this is what we chose at number five.
Titanic.
Number four.
The Aviator.
Number three.
Catch Me If You Can. Number two. Blood Diamond.
Number one.
The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yay!
Leo's that brings
done.
Us to the end of another episode of Profiles with Malone and Metz.
Malone and Metz. Next week, who do we have? Come on, JT. Wrong button.
Not it.
Keep going.
Let's not get caught. What are you talking about? Let's keep going.
Ridley Scott, and why am I not surprised
that I chose Thelma and Louise?
That you chose, of any Ridley Scott movie like Alien or Blade Runner,
one of the best feminist films ever made.
Thelma and Louise, you are so predictable, Alicia Malone.
I can't wait to talk more about that film, to rewatch that film,
yeah,
plus all his other movies. Of course, he's got a new one coming out, so we'll be talking about that as well. Until then, make sure you subscribe to youtube.com/popcorntalk.network. Find us on iTunes. Rate and review us. Please.
We really need these ratings and reviews and subscriptions on iTunes so we can keep coming back to do profiles with these great filmmakers week after week. And also, please go to our Facebook page, Profiles with Malone and Mance on the Schmoes No Network. It's a mouthful, but please head over, like our page, join in on the great fun of Profiles with Malone and Mance.
Yeah, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
The views expressed herein are those of the host only and do not necessarily reflect the views of its owners or principals.